Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Hey gang, this is Ashley from the Video Nasty Project. This time we have a UCLA student film from the early 80s.
It is
Pranks, UK title for Death Dorm, aka the dorm that dripped blood. So come back in a few seconds, the trailer's gonna drop here, and then we're gonna tear it up. Well, not literally.
It's time for a crash course in terror at the dorm that dripped blood.
Great.
What's wrong?
The phone's dead.
Did you hear anything up on the roof?
Do you think we need to go up there?
Need to? Yeah, we don't need to do anything.
Dorm that dripped blood, where the only thing you'll learn is how to die. The Dorm That Dripped Blood, rated R.
And that was The Dorm That Dripped Blood, aka Just Pranks, which is a really terrible name for the movie.
I believe also Death Dorm.
Death Dorm, yeah.
Death Dorm, there's one other name.
Of the three, Death Dorm is probably the best name.
Yeah.
And really, this is your bog-standard slasher flick. This is a slasher movie.
Very derivative.
It starts out with... Well, it starts out giving you what you want in a slasher movie. It kills somebody right off the bat.
Very nastily.
Unnamed. Okay. There's a madman on the loose.
Yeah, it doesn't... He doesn't ever show up again. They never bring it up again. He just kind of is there for one purpose and one purpose only, to titillate the audience with a little bit of gore. And then we find out that it's Christmas break, and they're shutting the dorm down for the holiday, because... And then they're going to tear it down.
They're going to renovate it into apartments first. Then they're going to tear it down. That made no sense to me.
Yeah,
that was stupid. Oh, they're going to tear this down, but we're going to remove everything from it that makes it a dormitory and turn it into apartments first. Then they're going to tear it down. What?
So you've got this dormitory that's going to be apartments that is going to get torn down. And you've got this crew of four people, well, actually five. And five kids that are hanging out and getting a little extra money to clean up the place. So they're going to take all the beds and all the desks and everything out of the dorm. And then they're going to roll in the wrecking ball and knock it down. So you've got the lead boss.
You got the jock. Well, you got two jocks. And you've got another woman there who's probably graduate age by the look of her.
And they got Daphne and Zunga in here.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Debbie was there very briefly.
Princess movie. Vespa gets killed in the first 5 minutes of the movie or so.
I mean, I saw her name in the credits. Like, what? Wait a minute. Back that up. Yeah.
She's the only actress of note in this movie. Everybody else you've never heard of and will never hear of again.
We figured the rest of them did stage or some or commercials or something.
Could they all have a directing, producing, writing? That's where they went. They were in front of the camera because they needed somebody in front of the camera.
Right.
And so the movie consists of these four kids who are trying to clean up the dorm. And there's a lot of them walking up darkened corridors. They're doing their job, and occasionally that's when the crazy Ralph pops up. There's a weird man hanging out on campus.
If you gave Clint Howard, if he was taller and had
a lot of Clint Howard did hair. Actually adopt that look in a couple of the films he did.
So basically, Clint Howard with better teeth.
Yeah, basically.
And so Clint Howard, he'll pop up occasionally and look through the window, or like, you know, he'll be lurking in the background, and the four start to freak out.
And he's doing some stuff that's very red herring-ish. I mean, the first person gets killed with a combination of strangling and cutting the hand, and then his father gets Debbie's father gets killed with a bat full of nails, and then Debbie's mother gets strangled with a garrote, and Debbie gets killed by being run over by their car.
I am so pissed at that effect. If Lloyd Kaufman can take a melon, put a wig on it, put it underneath the car, have the car back up over the melon, and have it explode, there's absolutely no excuse that this movie could, in fact, do the same goddamn thing.
Considering that they're cookie-cutter copying other films.
Yeah. Well, that's what sets off the people probably thinking it's John Hammett, is he's seen rummaging through trash getting stuff like a chair leg or something like that, or table leg. And that's when I believe it was, what's her name? Not Debbie. Joanne walks up on him and says, "What are you doing here? You shouldn't be here. There's not supposed to be any other students here." And he walks off, and then she goes and tells Brian, the Robert Forster lookalike, kind of young Robert Forster, kind of hunky guy. And then that sets off Brian and Craig and what's her name? The other woman in that group. Whose name I can't remember for the life of me.
That's the thing. All these characters are largely interchangeable, and the only reason you can tell them apart is because X chromosome and Y chromosome. I had no idea who these characters were.
There's nothing to make to attach you to them. Their dialogue is written in such a fashion simply to identify the archetype. You have the big man on campus, you have the jock, the asshole, the leader,
the clown.
So in this instance, the movie fails at the prime rule of a horror movie. If you don't care about your characters, and in this case they're all interchangeable and completely boring, when they start dying, you don't care that they're dying.
Yeah.
That's one of the problems I had with the movie. It's like, you're just interchangeable. Big deal. And so that's what the movie pretty much does from that point in, is they wander around, try and find not Clint Howard, and then they're getting picked off one by one.
It was pretty by the numbers, and I mean, it's obviously written to get work. I mean, that's what you do these days. If you want to break into the movie industry, you make a slasher film.
Well, the movie was basically a student project, and they all went on to do, like, stuff in the industry. Like, the soundtrack. I was listening to the soundtrack over the opening credits, and I'm like, this sounds an awful lot like a mashup between Friday the 13th and Psycho.
Yeah.
And I went and checked the credits, and it's like, hey, that was the guy that did, like, Hellraiser and a Nightmare on Elm Street 2. So he got work in the industry.
The writing credits are two, but Stephen Carpenter's name appears repeatedly in the credits of this film. Writer of the story, writer of the screenplay, camera operator, director, editor. So it's obvious that this is the Evil Dead. It's a group of people who know one another, who have been in class with one another, and they said, "Let's make a horror film." And the one thing lacking is they didn't have a passion for what they were doing.
They didn't have the creativity and the drive that Sam Raimi would have.
Exactly.
Although he did go on and did like some other genre flicks, some other horror movie flicks. He did The Power and a couple of other schlocky
Currently, Stephen Carpenter has actually got his name out there with the miniseries of Grimm. And then the main primary television series, Grimm. That's him. The guy who did this film has made it big.
So he basically got work and basically just worked his way up the ladder.
Yeah.
The old-fashioned way.
So, it's a slasher movie. Let's get this out of the way right away. What's your favorite kill?
Favorite kill? I like where they went with the one, which is the pressure cooker.
The patty gets thrown in.
Yeah. But my problem with it, while I'm like, okay, that's all right, you've got something here, and you didn't utilize it, and that's Your victim should be awake and screaming.
We did see her kind of clawing her way out of the pot, and he slams the lid on it a couple of times. So obviously she's conscious. Yeah, she should have been screaming.
You've asked me. Your turn. What was your favorite kill?
I'm going to go with the baseball bat, because that thing was fucking gnarly, man. I mean, just, you know, dude's coming up the stairs, and then all of a sudden out of nowhere, just doom, 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 and bat, bat, bat. And I mean, just keeps going on and on and on. So, yeah, that was my favorite. I got a second favorite if you don't pick
car.
It. You like the... Okay, the garage of the car or the...
No, the getting run over. You don't see that often with stuff. You know, you just get a little bump. But they had the body shifting and everything and then all this blood and stuff like that. They didn't show whether he ran over her head, which he apparently didn't. I mean, because they showed... He showed her body... To Joanne, and it didn't look like a smashed pumpkin.
Generally, I thought the kills were pretty good and the effects were pretty decent. Okay, we're not talking any Tom Savini level stuff, but I thought for being a super low budget student effort, I thought the kills were pretty good and effective.
Yeah, they used standard trickery, bait and switch, like the baseball bat with the nails in it. Obviously, there weren't any nails on the side used on the actor. You know, it was pretty effective. They just kept hitting them like five or six times.
What I would have done if I were the one editing this and directing and writing this is that, okay, yes, you do have a whole bunch of red herrings hanging around. You've got the cops and the other folks hanging around that aren't not Clint Howard. I would have started bumping those people off. It's like, let's go the Giallo route and let's start removing suspects from the playing field by removing them from the playing field with a knife.
Convince me the handyman is the killer and then kill him. Convince me the strange guy rummaging in the dumpster, not Clint Howard. Convince me that he could be the killer. And stop wasting our time with this pointless POV shot on the roof.
Oh, that half minute walking along pathway.
All over the goddamn roof, and this slow walk up to the mattress, pause on it and walk away. Like, you're padding the time of the film. That's all you're doing.
It's not fair to compare a bunch of students making a student film to Mario Bava, but we were discussing earlier in the before the recording that, you know, the Bay of Blood takes and gives you a plate full of red herrings and executes it really well. So if they were going to steal from anywhere, they really need to steal from that.
It doesn't look like these guys in the course of their being in school and studying filmmaking that they were looking at international. They were not looking at foreign films. Their focus was on American movie making.
They were seeing what they were seeing in the multiplexes, which was your Halloween 2s and Friday the 13th 2s. And
all of their focus was on, I'm an American, so they looked at what America was watching.
Making these sleazy little movies for the little theaters, and they wanted to make a potboiler that could sell and make them a little money so they could maybe do something else.
One of the other things that they could have done to strengthen the flick, okay, maybe more kills, or if not necessarily more kills, space them out a little bit better. Because you get the front-loaded one right out of the gate, and then you get this long stretch of nothing but them wandering up and down dark corridors and up and down mysterious stairwells and dark stairwells, and then the kills start happening later on.
I've said this about a few of the other films where it's obvious that they came up with, all right, we've come up with five creative ways, gory ways to kill somebody. Now let's write a story to patch these deaths together. Whereas here, I think they wrote a story
and then tried to figure out how to get kills
into it. And then tried to add the kills into it. They did the opposite. That's my perception.
So let's talk about the ending. Now, if you have any inclination to go watch this movie, go skip now, skip us now, and go watch it, because it's actually kind of a clever twist, and if there's only one thing in this movie worth a damn, it's the clever twist ending.
Duck and cover.
I thought there was a braver choice to kill Joanne, you know, while she's out cold.
So Joanne gets knocked out, and then the handyman Trumbull shows up and to obviously, hey, I'm going to score. What the fuck's going on? Yeah, and him and Craig, the killer, get into a fight. And then the cops show up a few moments later, and Craig's been beaten down. He's lying on the ground, and the guy and Trumbull's standing over him. So like, you know, it's like, come on, you son of a bitch, let's go. The cops show up, and it's like, and they pull their guns and assume that Trumbull is the guy that's doing all the killing, and he's the psycho killer. And he's like, no, it's him. And the guy on the ground is like, wasn't me, man. That guy, look what he did. He knocked her out.
They say, you know, you've got 2 seconds, 3 seconds to turn around, or we shoot your ass. And he doesn't. And Craig pulls a buck knife.
And so the cops are like, you know, it's like, hey, man, are you okay? And he's like, oh, I don't know what happened, man. I don't know what happened, man. It's like, you stay here. We're going to go, you know, check her and check him and make sure he's dead. And we're going to go get some backup and some aid cars and stuff. So you stay right here. Don't move. And he's all like, shit, the game is up, because she's going to wake up here in a few minutes and tell him the game's up. So he picks her up and takes her around in the back where the incinerator is going full blast and just kind of in she goes.
The braver idea of not having the cops come in, as you hear one of the cops in the background off screen saying, let's go check the incinerator. And they never do, or they don't come in time. And this is as he's putting her in. You think, oh, they're going to come in here and they're going to save her at the last second. They never do. Then they switch to a couple of other cops outside, and they're talking. And one of the cops, the black cop, says, that smells really weird. What's in there?
Yeah, what's burning?
It doesn't smell right. And another cop is, you know, he's getting into his cruiser or whatever, says, I don't know, whatever.
Whatever, man, let's go. We got to go write some reports and roll credits. And that's how the movie ends. And I thought that was actually kind of a clever, kind of a brave way to end the movie, where the bad guy gets away with it.
There was nothing in his behavior or interaction with Joanne preceding that to establish that he had that fixation. If this is a guy who is overly amorous for the gal and there's people in his way, you'd think they would have demonstrated something in the story where he's hitting on her, asking her out, making suggestions. None of that happened.
They didn't support that thesis with actual backing up in the character development.
They started to, but they backed off. Because, I mean, Joanne says, okay, you guys can sleep on my floor. What's her name? Patty. You can sleep on my floor. And then Craig says, what about me? And she's like, are you kidding? And he gets kind of petulant and sulky and, you know, basically goes back to his room. I think he was starting to fixate on her a little more. Because she's obviously, you know, the pickup queen in this movie. Everybody wants her.
So what do you think the movie got right?
Atmosphere. The original intent, which was to be exactly what it's supposed to be, a slasher movie. And isolating the characters. And then some of the couple of the red herrings that got right, like John and Bill, the handyman Bill. Or is that Jack? I get mixed up. And then the junk salesman who was going to buy... He was going to buy 75 chairs. Because basically what they're doing is they're not only clearing the place out, they're selling the equipment. Chairs, tables, whatever. And so this guy's in it. And maybe he's thinking, well, you know, maybe I'll just take those chairs. Maybe I won't pay for them. Who's going to miss a bunch of co-eds? You know, fuck these kids. I'm going to whack them and take their chairs. And I'll sell them and make some big money and score some chicks.
Now he gets his ass kicked by the cops.
It has a solid basis for your bad guy and his motivations. It's just not realized well.
Right.
You have a variety of characters of different, you know, social, from different backgrounds of society. As I indicated earlier, you know, there's the gal who's in charge, who obviously shows that she's a leader. You commented, you have a pair of jocks. Well, yeah, they're both jocks. One of them is obviously the BMOC.
Yeah.
Right.
Obviously is.
And the other is the prankster.
And the other one's the prank, yeah. So, it's like they knew what they had to have, and then they fell short of not realizing it properly. It's like there's a lot of these half steps that show promise. What really sells the good part of the film is The camera work is good. The setups of the shots. I mean, as far as how the sets are lit.
The lighting, like the staging with the knife.
The staging with the knife. The comp where they compose shots. It's like these guys obviously have been to school. And they're doing what they learned. It's just they drop the ball in the realization of final product. I actually want to like the film. I want to.
Yeah, I'm much in the same boat where, I mean, it really, yeah, it almost but not quite comes together.
So it's a missed opportunity.
It's just, and that makes me sad more than anything else, more than a lazy filmmaking like The Return of the Boogeyman, where it's just, I'm going to take 50% of my previous movie and drop it into here as stock footage.
Yeah. I think I already did say that there was some laziness going. I don't think it was laziness. I think it was
inexperience
and a hard focus on horror films this is what's in Friday the 13th. This is what's in Halloween. This is what's in Slumber Party Massacre. This is what's in these films. Let's make a film and utilize all of those moments.
We have to tick all those checkboxes.
Yeah. But then didn't do anything to tie it together well.
But I wonder if this movie was competing with other movies being shot at the same time. And they said, we got to do this, we got to do this, we got it before these other guys come out and scoop us. Or maybe we want to scoop these guys. Or maybe they were coming up at the same time and they looked at other people's stuff and said, son of a bitch.
Yeah. That's a good observation. I mean, it's a film being shot by UCLA film students. It's being shot on campus. There may have been other people, other films being shot at the same time, and they were all competing. We got to get this done and done quickly. That's what I was saying is like the film is padded.
The one kill that didn't come off that I thought should have been more graphic was Brian's. I mean, because you have Craig behind, you know, up on the stairs with the flashlight, and then he slashes Brian's right arm with a machete, which later ends up in John's hands. He's walking down the court. He obviously found it. But then when you see Brian dead on this table in this room, it's his left arm that's missing. I didn't look this long enough to see if his right arm was actually missing, but he gets slashed here, and this one's missing from the shoulder. And he's all white and stuff, and it was clearly a dummy.
Continuity is a little wonky in this movie. Like, the very first kill, where, so, the guy is crouching in the bushes and peeking out, and he gets grabbed from behind and starts getting strangled. And he's got his hand on the ground, and his hand grits a machete through it. And you assume that, okay, well, there's too many hands in play here, because there's the two on his neck. Now, either that's the guy being strangled, and then he doesn't have his hand on the ground, or it's the killer, and then he doesn't have a hand to whack the hand with a machete. So there is some weird, they just didn't give a shit about continuity. So you got anything else left you got to say about the flick?
I think they had all the good ingredients, they just left a couple on the floor rather than putting them in the bowl.
And that's a pretty fair assessment of the entire movie, where it's kind of a bunch of good ideas but you're drinking the Jell-O from that it hasn't had time to set, so you can't have that liquid.
I'm going to draw on something from the comedian Gallagher. From one of his stand-up shows, he's talking about setting out to make a quiche. So you gotta whip the eggs, and you got all these things you got to do to make a quiche, and you're sitting there diligently, and the patience wears thin. Fuck it, I'm just doing making scrambled eggs.
So was the Dorm the Drip Blood nasty?
It was pretty gruesome. I mean, there were some kills in there that were just downright gratuitous and sick, so I'm kind of on the fence about it a little bit.
Of all the slasher movies that are out there in existence, all your Friday the 13th and your Burnings and your everything else that you can think of, this is really tame compared to those. Yeah. So why this got nailed and then subsequently dropped, and those didn't get nailed just baffles me.
Well, considering that they edited out the footage that made them consider it as it was released in England, no, I wouldn't have put it on the list because they took it, they took the nasty out. It's like, what the hell? So no, it's not.
Did you like the dorm that dripped blood?
The dorm that dripped boredom?
Okay, that tips your hand.
It has moments that are like, okay, I can see that there's some thought going into this, but it was a cliche-riddled film, formula-written. I don't like it.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it to a degree, in so much as you can like a knockoff of something that's a knockoff of something else.
I will give you that the movie doesn't do an awful lot to distinguish itself from its slasher movie peers. So it's kind of, I'm kind of meh on it. I didn't hate it. I was bored in places. It had problems, but I thought the ending was pretty tight, and the shocked ending at the end was paid off for me. So I kind of half-heartedly okay.
Basically, this is a by-the-numbers movie. This is the year, the 2 or 3 years where everybody and their grandmother was literally cranking these out everywhere in this country at the same time to capitalize on Friday the 13th and everything it promised on delivering.
So, no, and a thumbs up. So
it's all right.
We get the full gamut of, the full house, the full spectrum of opinion this time around. All right, that's fair enough. That's fine. All right, we'll catch you all next week.
Well, gang, that was Death Dorm, a.k.a. the dorm that dripped blood, or as they say in England, pranks. So, I'm going to sit next week out, but the gang are going to review Evil Dead. A bit of Sam Raimi to clear the passages. So, if you like what you've seen, join us at the Video Nasty Project at gmail.com. Drop us a letter, say what you like, say what you didn't, and they'll see you next week. And remember, stay evil.
Hi there.
Hi.
You a freshman?
Yeah.
What's your name?
Nancy.
Where are you from, Nancy?
Florida.
How do you like it here? Hey, Nancy, hey, come here, look what I thought of you. Hey,